Hey, hey, everyone. Welcome to Flanatomy, the podcast where anatomy meets attitude. I'm your co-host, Kesha Reyna, your friendly neighborhood fact checker, sass dispenser, and occasional voice of reason.
And I'm Dr. Stephen Flanagan, or Flan if you've already been stuck in one of my three-hour lectures. I make anatomy fun, mildly dangerous, and occasionally existential.
Emphasis on occasionally existential.
Hey, you'd be surprised how philosophical you get when you've spent a whole semester talking about fascia and someone asks, but where does the body end?
Okay, Socrates, let's not scare people off in the first minute. Today we're kicking off our muscle series, four glorious episodes diving deep into how the human body moves, flexes, and makes weird faces in selfies.
That's right, and we're starting with the stars of the show, the muscles of the face and neck. These are the ones that make you smile, chew, frown, pout, and nod politely while pretending to listen in class.
So basically all the ones I overuse during staff meetings.
Exactly.
Let's start from the top, literally, the frontalis muscle. Sounds fancy, but it's basically your I'm shocked muscle, right?
Precisely. The frontalis sits across your forehead. It's the reason your eyebrows go up when you see your exam grade. It's connected to the occipitalis muscle at the back of your head through a sheet of connective tissue called the epicranial aponeurosis, kind of like a tough, stretchy headband.
So it's like the front and back halves of the same team?
Yeah, they work in tandem. When the occipitalis pulls, the frontalis can relax and vice versa. Anatomists used to call them the occipitofrontalis, treating it like one unified muscle, but these days we split it into two.
Science forever complicating things that were working just fine.
That's what we do best. But the frontalis is a fascinating example of how your skin is directly influenced by the muscles underneath. Facial expression muscles, unlike most others, actually attach to the skin, not to bone, on both ends. That's why Botox works. It paralyzes that muscle. And, the overlying skin can't wrinkle.
So when people say, my forehead doesn't move, that's not a metaphor.
Exactly. It's neuromuscular reality.
Okay, moving down a bit, the temporalis. That's one of those muscles you can feel flex if you bite down hard, right?
Yes. Place your hand just above your ear and clench your jaw. Feel that bulge. That's your temporalis doing its job. It's a powerful elevator of the mandible. That's the anatomy speak for jaw closer.
So it's working with the masseter, right?
Teamwork makes the chew work. The masseter is the main star when you're crushing through a sandwich, but the temporalis gives that precision and control, like a sniper's trigger finger.
That explains why my temporalis was sore after I stress ate a bag of almonds during finals.
Ah, yes, the temporalis workout plan. 12 reps of panic chewing. Segment 3, orbicularis oculi, the real smiler.
Let's talk about smiles. The orbicularis oculi, my favorite muscle to say three times fast.
That's your eye's ring of power. It's a circular muscle that closes your eyelids. You use it to blink, squint, and make that scrunchy eye when you're really laughing. The one that makes your cheeks rise.
The Duchenne smile, right? The genuine one.
Exactly. The fake smile only uses your zygomaticus major, but the real smile, the one that makes you look like you mean it, fires up the orbicularis oculi too.
So our eyes really do smile. I love that.
Yep. The eyes may be the window to the soul, but the orbicularis oculi are the curtains.
Did you just write that on the fly?
Maybe I've had too much coffee.
All right, let's wrinkle our noses, literally. The nasalis muscle.
This little muscle helps flare your nostrils. And you don't realize how expressive it is until you meet someone who does it too much.
Or when you're in a gym locker room.
Yes, that nostril flare says, I can smell testosterone. But the nasalis is important. It helps control airflow and plays a role in subtle expressions, especially disgust or distaste. Segment 5, the orbicularis oris and the buccinator. Talk, kiss, and chew.
Okay, the orbicularis oris, that's the lip muscle, right?
Correct. It's a complex sphincter around your mouth. It lets you pucker, pronounce words, and keep food inside while chewing.
Basically, the muscle of shut your mouth, literally.
Exactly. And deep to that is the buccinator, one of my favorites. It's like the unsung hero of the face.
I know you love this one. You always bring up frogs when you talk about it.
Absolutely. Frogs use a process called buccal pumping to breathe. They literally push air into their lungs by expanding and contracting their cheek region using the buccinator. So next time you blow up your cheeks for a selfie, think, I'm one evolutionary step from a frog.
That's going to ruin selfies for people.
You're welcome.
Now the masseter, this one's famous. I read somewhere it's one of the strongest muscles in the body by weight.
That's right. Pound for pound, the masseter can exert impressive force, up to around 200 pounds of bite force in some people. That's the reason we can crack hard foods and also why stress jaw clenching is so painful.
So this little side muscle of the face can technically outlift most of us?
In a sense, yeah. I mean, I once deadlifted 600 pounds back in my more reckless youth, but the masseter's doing that every day at scale.
There it is. The first weightlifting story of the podcast.
I'll pace myself. But the masseter deserves respect. It's pure functional power, and it operates nonstop, even when you're talking too much. When deadlifting, I like to wear a mouth guard so that I don't crack teeth when I clench my jaw.
Wow, the masseter is that strong?
Yes, the masseter muscle is absolutely strong enough to crack teeth if you clench your jaw with enough force. It can generate 500, 700 newtons in healthy adults, sometimes more. That amount of force is easily enough to fracture enamel, which is the hardest substance in the body. Under the right conditions, I actually had to get a special crown PU on because I did fracture a molar clinching to hard on a big pull.
Bananas. Now let's move below the jaw, the hyoid region. I always thought this part was weirdly poetic. It's a floating bone, right?
Yeah, the hyoid's unique. It doesn't articulate with any other bone. It's like a tiny horseshoe just chilling in your neck. It's the anchor point for a bunch of small muscles. The mylohyoid, digastric, sternohyoid, thyrohyoid, sternothyroid, and of course, the sternocleidomastoid and scalens a bit lower.
I love the digastric. Di meaning two, gastric meaning belly. Two bellies. It's like the muscle's got a six-pack of its own.
Exactly. One anterior belly, one posterior, connected by a tendon that loops through the hyoid. It helps open your jaw, which is why you can yawn so dramatically.
Speaking of the hyoid, it's been in the news again recently. Epstein, right? The report's about a broken hyoid bone.
Yeah, I'll say this. The only reason I noticed that story was for its anatomical relevancy. A fractured hyoid is rare, often associated with strangulation, but that's as far as we'll go. We'll leave the rest for Reddit.
Smart move. Stay in your lane, doc.
Exactly. Anatomy, not conspiracy, but it is fascinating how such a small structure can be so diagnostically telling.
Okay, let's end with two big ones, the sternocleidomastoid and the scalens.
Yes, the SCM, the show-off of the neck. It's the one that pops out when you turn your head or shout at your car's GPS. It runs from the sternum and clavicle up to the mastoid process behind your ear, hence the name.
So sterno is for the sternum, cleido is for the clavicle, and mastoid is referring to the bony knob behind your ear. It's literally the map of its attachments in the name.
Exactly, etymology meets anatomy, my favorite combo.
And the scalens, those are deeper neck muscles, right?
Yep, three of them, anterior, middle, and posterior, forming a kind of ladder. They help with breathing by elevating the first two ribs, and they also stabilize the neck. When they tighten too much, you feel that awful tech neck tension.
So posture matters.
Always. I tell my students, the body's just one long negotiation between gravity and dignity.
I'm stealing that for a t-shirt.
Another interesting point is that the neck is totally underrated as a communication tool. Spotlight on the sternocleidomastoid. It's the main mover when you turn your head or nod yes. It's also super obvious when you tense up or stretch out. So your mood's basically on display for those who notice.
Right. And like, don't forget the platysma. That's the thin one. Kind of like that piece of cling film you can never peel off a plate. I noticed this in my fitness classes. When people come in all nervous, their platysma tightens up and their neck gets all stringy. It's like a literal dead giveaway somebody's feeling awkward. There was this one time I spotted a new guy, barely said hi, but his neck was basically screaming, "Don't look at me."
Exactly. And certain gestures, like the classic head tilt, carry a ton of cultural baggage. You tilt your head in some cultures, it's curiosity or friendliness. Others might see it as, "I'm not buying your story." Meanwhile, a stretched neck could be confidence or just someone checking if the snack table is still open. Nonverbal cues are a whole language of their own.
Totally. And when you pay attention, you can spot those subtle signals everywhere. I mean, I'm not saying I'm a neck psychic, but once you start looking, it's like you can feel the social vibes in the room just by watching people's posture. It's not always nerves. It could be pride or just someone pretending they know what's happening in Zumba. Happens all the time.
So true. The sternocleidomastoid and platysma muscles do way more than just look interesting under a neck scarf. They're basically broadcasting your emotional playlist, whether you realize it or not. And I swear, now that we've talked about it, you'll never unsee it. You'll be catching secret neck signals everywhere. Speaking of unintentional signals, let's talk about resting face and all those snap judgments we make without saying a word.
Okay, confession. I 100% have resting, unimpressed face. I can't help it. But like, what's going on with that scientifically? Is it just habit or is it like my bone structure sneaking shade?
You're not alone. The resting face, some folks might call it, well, other things online, is partly the result of muscle, tone, and natural anatomical differences. Some people have a heavier set of facial muscles at rest, so their features fall into a particular look. Your orbicularis oris or depressor anguli oris might subtly pull your corners down, even if you're chillin' and loving life.
That's wild. And there's actual research, right? Didn't they do like a study on politicians and how facial tension changed people's trust instantly? It's so memeable. Like, you see a still of someone mid-sentence and boom, it's the next viral judging you meme.
Yep. Some peer-reviewed studies actually found that chronic facial or neck tension sends social signals even if you're not aware you're doing it. People seem more approachable or trustworthy if their resting face is neutral or a bit upturned. I used to overpractice my smile in grad school, thought I could train my way into a better first impression. But I just ended up with facial cramps and some awkward encounters in the mirror. I still think my mirror flinches when I walk by.
Okay, but is it even worth trying to fix your resting face? Isn't that like exhausting? I say just give us a little grace. If you see someone looking aloof, maybe they're just deep in thought, not plotting your doom. But I get the pressure, especially with all those viral face memes. People read so much into an unintentional look.
Honestly, I'm with you. Anatomy sets the stage, but personality, context, and I don't know how many finals you pulled, all-nighters for matter way more. We're all wired a bit differently, so embrace your natural expression or, you know, just own your resting grad student panic face like I did for years. Keeps people guessing.
That's basically my life motto. Confuse them with kindness and maybe a little sass. All right, that's our time. This has been Face and Neck Anatomy Unveiled. Now you literally can't unsee other people's zygomaticus in action. Dr. F, you ready to go analyze the next family photo?
You know it, Kashia. And thanks to everyone listening for geeking out with us about anatomy one awkward smile at a time. Next episode, we'll dig even deeper. So save those stories, stretch those necks, and we'll catch you next time on Flanatomy. Bye, Kashia.
Bye, Dr. F. Later, everyone. Keep those expressions interesting.